यदा हि धर्मशः ग्लानिर्भवति भारत। अद्युतानम् अधर्मशः तदात्मानं सृजाम्यहम्। परित्राणाय साधुना विनाशाय च दुष्कृता। धर्म संस्थापना शंभवामि युगे। हरेर नाम केवलम्। कलौ नास्तेव गतिरन्यथा।
Hare Krishna, welcome to this weekly Krishna Conscious program. And once again, we'd like to invite all the listeners to the Hare Krishna Temple, which is at 1229 Coldfield Riverhead Highway, also known as Highway 28. And this week, we are having a very special program. Remember, like every other Sunday, today's program will start at 11:30 with bhajans and kirtans, followed by Aarti of their lordships at 12:30. Then we'll have a discourse on Krishna consciousness from 1 to 2, followed by Guru Puja of our founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we finish the day's program at 2:30 with Vegetarian Feast. Please remember this Tuesday, we have our main festival of the year, which is Janmashtami, the appearance day of Lord Sri Krishna, which will start at 4:30 in the morning with candlelit aarti. Then follow, we'll have darshan aarti at 8 in the morning, where the lordships will appear in their new garments, new dressings. And the darshan will be open whole day on Tuesday. The main festival will start at 6 in the evening. When everybody will get a chance to do abhishek, obeying of their lordships. There is ample parking space for everyone. If you are a bit late, there will be parking at the next door golf course. And from here, minibuses will cart you to the temple. Remember, we'll be providing buses from the golf course back to the temple. And on Wednesday, we'll have the Vyas Puja of our founder Acharya, birthday celebration of our founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So please come along to these festivals, join us and celebrate Janmashtami in Vyas Puja of our founder Acharya. The Vyas Puja will be celebrated during the day from 10:30 in the morning, but Janmashtami is on Tuesday evening. Please come along and join us. And now I'll continue with the Ramayana recital. Last week we left at the wedding ceremony. It was just about to begin when Lord Ram won the hands of Sita. And he makes a ekpatani varta, a vow of monogamy, to have only one wife and to be loyal to her. The joy of Ayodhya's woman knew no bounds, because men in Ayodhya married multiple times following the role model of their king, Dasharatha. With this vow of Rama, the king, the future king, the women were delighted. Polygamy was on its way out. Vasishtha asked the couple to exchange garlands. Ram decided to have a bit of fun. Ram was much taller than Sita, and she could not really garland him if he did not bend. But Ram decided not to budge from his position. Lakshman immediately came to Sita's rescue. He touched Ram's feet, knowing that he would bend to pick him up. Clever as Sita was, Sita seized the opportunity and put the garland around Ram's neck, to waves of laughter rippling through the audience. Ram was impressed both with Sita's presence of mind and Lakshman's cleverness. One by one, all couples were tied in matrimony. All couples offered their respect to their parents, the great sages, and to every elder who had come to bless them. Celebrations rang through every corner of Mithila. There was merriment in the air, as if happiness was dancing in the streets. People could just not fathom the reason for feeling so irresistibly happy. For everyone's happiness, the most profound was sage Vishwamitra. But it was not the marriage of his disciples that had gladdened his heart. There was much more to his ecstasy. Vishwamitra could now head onwards and live a life dedicated to Ram. He had finally managed to unlock the door he had seen back when he was at war with Vasishtha, and he could now head home, his real home, the feet of Lord Almighty. Vishwamitra handed over all his powers and knowledge to Lord Ram, his world. He lived up to his name, a friend of the entire Vishwamitra, a friend of the entire world. Ram now had all the means and resources to protect the entire world and chase away the demonic forces. An even greater task Vishwamitra accomplished for the benefit of the entire world was uniting Sita with Ram. Vishwamitra has carried out all his responsibilities and perfected his life by his service to Lord Ram. He now wanted to head north to spend the rest of his life by meditating on Lord Ram. He sought Ram's Lord Ram's permission to move on and embark upon his spiritual journey. The next morning, when Mithila was yet to wake up from the hangover of the intoxicating joy and that had fallen into this, befallen the city, Vishwamitra walked into the horizon towards the Himalayas. Vishwamitra had headed towards the mountains now, and that his peoples were married. Dastra's job in Mithila was done, and he decided to return home. He could not wait to celebrate his son's successes and marriages in his own city with his own people. He could feel the throbbing expectations of all those who had not gone on this historic Mithila trip, instead staying back in Ayodhya to protect and maintain their city. When the entire royal entourage woke up early next morning in Mithila, it was as if a hive of bees had been stirred awake. They were buzzing with the excitement of returning home to Ayodhya to more celebrations. What was even better was that they could take home with them Ayodhya's princes and their wives. Mithila had turned into one big bustling fair to watch the newlyweds. Soon the brave and the handsome Suryavansi brothers stepped out of their beautiful and angelic wives, for the customary newly married public appearance. Hoots and hollers and haws rippled through the crowd. It was quite a commotion. Everyone wanted to get the best view. The crowd could not have enough of the royal couples. Dasharatha and his queens could well imagine the hullabaloo that awaited them back home. Meanwhile, although heavy-hearted, Janak and his brother Kushadwaj were all set to send off their beloved daughters. They ordered expensive gifts and valuable things to be packed into palkins and loaded onto elephants. They should accompany their daughters to Ayodhya. Countless things were being packed and stacked so that it seemed almost as if all of Mithila's precious belongings were being sent to Ayodhya. Soon the Mithilas would have to bid their favorite daughters goodbye. Janak and the Mithilas had eyes brimming with tears. These weren't the sad tears a girl's family sheds on her leaving home for her in-law's house. Instead, these were tears of joy and relief. Mithila's daughters were now in safe hands. The illustrious Ram and his brothers had received its most valuable treasures. Sweet and sorrow followed through Mithila's veins. As Ayodhya streamed out of the city, Janak and Kushadwaj, their ministers and all the sages walked the procession to Mithila's boundaries, bade everyone farewell and returned home. It seemed as if the waves had washed our precious selves on the beach and returned to the loving embrace of the ocean. Dasara's entrance was celebrating so much that it was like a sugar rush. People danced and sang throughout the journey home in a carriage drawn by powerful horses, flanked by the chariots of his four sons. Dasara soaked in every ray of sunshine surrounding him. The smiling coy brides swayed along with the bedecked swinging palkins perched on the strong shoulders of nimble-footed carriers. Trailing them was the mirthful sea of Ayodhya citizens, bracketed by the marching rows of Ayodhya's formidable army. Dasharatha cast his triumphant gaze all around. He was the master and protector of all he surveyed. The king of Ayodhya was floating in his seemingly everlasting, uplifting movement. Dasharatha's reverie was shattered by a ear-splitting wail. This sinister cry seemed to come from above. The celebrant screeched to a halt under the trembling feet of the dancing revelers. Dasrath looked up to witness the most ominous sight he had ever seen. Hordes of birds hovering in the dark sky, screeching as if in excruciating pain. Dasrath was certain this was a very bad omen. His heart pounding, he turned towards the spiritual guru Vasishtha, hoping for an answer and a solution. If this horrific phenomenon warranted one, Vasishtha knew everything. Dasrath hoped he knew what all this meant too. Vasishtha monitored the flight pattern of the distressed birds. It was a sure sign of an apocalyptic catastrophe. Vasishtha then looked around and saw something very reassuring. The animals were going around in circles. The anxious Vasishtha suddenly broke into an all-knowing smile. This swift emotion shifted befuddled Dasrath. Before he could ask his guru anything, Vasishtha decoded the phenomena of his disciple. The screeching birds definitely pointed towards an approaching calamity. But then the animals moving in circles bodes good news. The calamity will cause no harm. Dasrath's frayed nerves were instantly calmed. Dasrath soon realized that relief was only a split-second luxury. Soon the earth shuddered and shook as if a million elephants had stomped in unison. A violent dust storm whirled up in the distance and came swirling at great speed towards the entrance. The storm was on a rampage, demolishing everything along its way. Trees lay uprooted, lakes evaporated, bees swarmed out of their hives, wild beasts fled out of their shelters, snakes and rats rushed out of their holes, and helpless birds spun uncontrollably in the storm. The ravaging dust blanket soared up to blur the sun and roll down a curtain of darkness. The shrieks and howls, the swirling dust and the raining gloom was more than any heart could withstand. Everyone in the faint-hearted procession fell unconscious, bearing Dasrath, Vasishtha, the brave brothers, and the shy princes and some sages. With each wheel toward Dasrath's chariot, the storm seemed to wane in favor. The moment it reached the chariot, it came to an abrupt halt. The thick dust plume settled to reveal the formidable force behind the destruction. The past seemed to have returned to haunt Dasrath, for towering over him was an intimidating, broad-shouldered, barrel-chested hermit with a conical dreadlock knot on his head, wearing a two-piece deer skin, one covering his loins and another thrown across his torso. The passive, sage-like attire blurred his warrior-like demeanor. Glowing bloody eyes, rage-radiating flushed face, hot, heavy breath. Worse still were his menacing weapons, a huge bow in his left hand and a battle axe on his right shoulder. An axe-wielding hermit? Horror gripped Dasrath as soon as he recognized the raging storm. He stifled a scream under his breath. Parshuram, he is back! Those 350 marriages of hair breath escaped just whizzed past Dasrath's mind. Alas, now he was trembling before the very revenge-seeking sage he had been escaping from for so long. Even recollecting the horrific past sent tremors down Dasrath's spine. How could this be happening? Hadn't Parshuram retired peacefully to the Mahendra Mountains, forsaken his avenging rage against the Kshatriyas for mercilessly slaughtering his father? Why had he stormed back? Dasrath had no answers. He did not know what to say and how or whether to plead for anything at all. Parshuram alone knew why he had returned. The sages accompanying Vasishtha bowed to this warrior incarnate of Lord Vishnu and paid their respect and eulogized him with words befitting exalted sages. Parshuram boom. A few days ago, a deafening roar shook the Mahindra mountain and spoiled my meditation. That instant, I took a vow to meet the one responsible for the tumult. I am looking for Rama, the breaker of Lord Shiva's mighty vow. Parshuram looked at Rama and appreciated the valor he displayed through the slaying of powerful demons and the breaking of Lord Shiva's bow. It really did not matter how unimaginable and astounding his earlier feat was. Parshuram had come all the way from the mountains just to test his skills on an equally powerful bow. Would Ram care to display his strength on Parshuram's bow? A slight mysterious smile slipped through the corner of Ram's mouth. He knew that the ignorant Parshuram too was an incarnation of Lord Vishnu just like him and was throwing a futile challenge at him. Parshuram raised his massive arm, flashing his golden bow for all to see. He walked up to Ram and incited him to string this new bow, the bow of Lord Vishnu. Could Ram string Lord Vishnu's bow with as much ease as he had Lord Shiva's? If Ram could actually achieve this feat, Parshuram promised to deal with him. After having cast the challenge, the remaining Parshuram glared at the calm Ram. Parshuram's provocation drove Dasharatha insane. His fears revisited him and he wondered how Ram would accomplish such a task. The protective father seemed to have conveniently forgotten that his son had not so long ago broken Lord Shiva's vow and even killed some formidable demons. Dasharatha stepped off his chariot and fell on his knees, imploring Parshuram to let go of this challenge. In all these years, Dasharatha had never had the courage to appear before Parshuram and had always chosen to hide behind weddings when this Kshatriya slayer came knocking. Now, immense love for his son had given him the gumption to face Parshuram. He loved Ram more than his own life. Dasharatha pleaded with Parshuram and coldly calling him by another name, asked him, Bhargava Ram, why do you want to take up weapons after having renounced them and ventured to the Mahindra? What could you achieve by threatening and challenging a child? Dasharatha's prayer went unheard because Parshuram's gaze was fixed on Ram. He raised his eyebrows as if asking Ram if he had the mettle to take up his challenge. But Ram's mind was elsewhere. He had never before seen his father on his knees begging for his life. Ram lauded Parshuram's commitment towards his own father, Jamdagni, and the fact that Parshuram's intense love and respect for his father had led him to take up arms to revenge his father's death. Ram's appreciations impressed both Parshuram and Dasharatha. Ram was deft at pleasing many individuals simultaneously. Parshuram interpreted Ram's praise as not being judged for his killings, whereas Dasharatha interpreted it as Ram's high regard for the ex-wielding warrior. Ram's words meant different things to Parshuram and Dasharatha, but he was also making a point of his own. If Parshuram had so much respect for his own father, how could he let another father beg in front of him? This, Ram pointed out to Parshuram, amounted to a double standard not worthy of a father-loving son. Ram then reprimanded Parshuram for doubting his abilities and yanked the bow off his hand. Even Parshuram, the warrior known to travel as fast as the mind with arms that moved as fast as the wind was taken away. Standing in front of the mighty Parshuram was just a boy who had snatched away his bow at lightning speed. Even before a perfect Parshuram could react, Ram bent the bow, strung it, had pointed an arrow towards the axe-wielding hermit. The confidence and the ease with which Ram maneuvered the bow told Parshuram that he had reached his true owner. This must be Lord Vishnu, he concluded. The two incarnations of Lord Vishnu, Parshuram and Ram, were standing next to each other. Ram, bow in hand with an air of authority, asked Parshuram where he should shoot the arrow, now that he had already drawn one. Ram did not want to kill Parshuram, because he was a Brahman and was also related to his master Vishwamitra as the descendant of his sister Kaushiki. He gave Parshuram two options. He could either shoot the arrow at Parshuram's leg to disable him, or aim at all the powers and piety that Parshuram had acquired through years of meditation. Parshuram chose to sacrifice his piety and justified his choice. He had donated it, which he had won by killing the rulers, to Kashyap Muni, because of which he no longer had the right to stay overnight on the planet. Parshuram decided he needed his limbs to keep his promise and head for his abode in Mahindra Mountains before nightfall. We'll stop there for the week.
Shama Sundara Mana Mohana